When Jeff led that song this morning, "'Tis so sweet to trust in Jesus," I was thinking that over the course of my life preaching the gospel, I've never had the opportunity to sing that song many times, because usually it's when someone's getting baptized and I'm in the back putting on waiters, and usually you all are singing that song. But I appreciate that. Appreciate the fact of you being here this morning. Those that are visiting with us, we're glad to see some old friends that we haven't seen in quite some time, as well as some others that I am connected with in one way or another. Brother Hammer back there, I remember his mom and dad at Berksville years ago. They lived, I really guess they lived outside Maribel, wasn't it? And on Highway 90, and I remember them very fondly. And good to see Hazel as well, Judy's sister here today, as well as others that you're here. Good to have people back with us after they've been out of town for some time, together back with us again, and good to see you all this morning. We need to remember those of our number that are ill as well. Certainly remember Pat, she's in the hospital battling her health problems. Paranoia. Something made me think of this lesson a while back, and I had never preached on this sermon before. After all these years of preaching, putting together sermons now for 40 years, and never spoke on this subject before, so I'll try it out this morning to you. People many times experience that, the fear about other people that are against us, people that are talking bad about us, or people that are trying to hurt us. We see there are different types. There are some severe types because of maybe substance abuse, or maybe because of some mental impairment in their life that produces many forms of paranoia, to where actually people, they lose touch with reality. I was reading about a fellow that wrote a novel. He was a mathematician, John Nash. He wrote a well-known book, made a movie out of it called A Beautiful Mind. A Beautiful Mind, maybe you saw that movie. And some of his darkest periods, he believed men that wore red ties were with the Communist Party, and they were against him. I'm looking out today. Jeff, you're the only one. A red tie. So he would have trouble with Jeff today concerning that. But people, they experience very severe types of paranoia sometimes. And then there are very common types that it doesn't go to that extreme. Maybe the pain that we've suffered in the past with someone causes us to lose trust in that person. And we grow with the idea that they're going to, or we expect them to hurt us again. And therefore, we're not going to trust them. We're not going to trust them anymore because of how they could hurt us. And this is definitely a barrier in establishing close relationships. There are those that are felt many times by Christians. As a preacher and elder, probably more so than sometimes you can imagine. People, they feel that someone is giving them the dirty look, or it's the perceived dirty look from across the auditorium, and they imagine this in their mind, and they feel that they are being slighted, and they are alienated by someone else, and they have hurt feelings, and they don't want to take the time to talk to the person. And how in the world are you going to spend, heaven together if you feel like that with so many people? Even preachers sometimes feel like this. I remember Ken Green years ago. He was getting ready to go preach at a place called Jordan Park in Huntsville, Alabama. Jordan Park. And it was a large congregation back then. And the very first Sunday, as people were walking in, Brother Green, he was shaking their hands. And a lady walked past him, a little elderly lady. She said, "Pew." Walked on past him. So he taught the Bible class, and he was looking at her during the Bible class. He thought, "Why does that, person feel like that toward me?" And then in the, announcements, he thought about it even more as they were singing the first few songs. Started thinking, why doesn't that person like me? He came in and said, "Phew." And then he got up and was preaching, was looking out there, looking at her again. And he thought, what's wrong with her that she's treated me like this? So after church, one of the elders there, Marshall Patton's brother, Herschel, one of the elders there, and he asked Herschel, he said, "That lady right there coming down the middle aisle right now, what's wrong with her?" And Herschel looked, he said, "Oh, you mean Sister Pew?" So he didn't have anything to worry about. She was just saying her name to him. But he was paranoid concerning that. Dangers of paranoia. It's talked about several times in the Bible. Paranoia often has no true basis in reality. Over in 1 Samuel chapter 16, we'll start there this morning. 1 Samuel chapter 16. Verse 16 through 23. 1 Samuel 16, verse 16 through 23. This is before David kills Goliath now. Give you some idea where we are. 1 Samuel 16, verse 16. "Let our Lord now command your servants who are before you. Let them seek a man who is a skillful player on the harp. And it shall come about when the evil from God is upon you that he shall play the harp with his hand, and you'll be well." So Saul said to his servants, "Provide for me now a man who can play well and bring him to me." Then one of the young men said, "Behold, I have seen the son of Jesse, the Bethlehemite, who is a skillful musician, a mighty man of valor, a warrior, one prudent in speech, a handsome man, and the Lord is with him." Saul sent messengers to Jesse and said, "Send me your son David, who is with the flock." And Jesse took a donkey loaded with bread and a jug of wine and a young goat and sent them to Saul by David his son. Then David came to Saul and attended him, and Saul loved him greatly. And he became his armor bearer. Saul sent to Jesse saying, "Let David now stand before me, for he has found favor in my sight." And it came about whenever the evil spirit from God came to Saul, David would take the harp and play it in his hand, and Saul would be refreshed and be well, and the evil spirit would depart from him. Now we see the story after David kills Goliath in chapter 18. And in verses 8 through 11, chapter 18, verses 8 through 11, it says, "And Saul became very angry and was very displeased with him and said, They have ascribed to David 10,000, but to me they have ascribed 1,000. What more can he have? What more can he have but the kingdom? Paranoia, ladies and gentlemen, will lead us to feel the same way. Without real evidence that someone has done anything against us, David, just the opposite. He has done everything for Saul, King Saul. He has played the harp for him. He has been a faithful servant to him. He has been an armor bearer. He's gone out through the power of God and has struck down Goliath. And you would think now that Saul would be overjoyed by all the things that's happening within his life. But here he feels paranoia. He feels paranoia concerning David as he imagines in his own mind an entire amount of steps that David has taken to hurt him. When he hasn't done that at all. So one thing you see here is, the paranoia here can alienate. Paranoia can alienate loyal friends. Paranoia also causes us to assume the worst. In 1 Samuel, again, in chapter 21, we sort of move down the life of David now. As Saul, as he is after David, we see in chapter 21 about David taking the consecrated bread. Chapter 21, verses 1 through 6. Chapter 21, 1 Samuel 1 through 6. And David came to Nob to Ahimelech the priest, and Ahimelech came trembling to meet David and said, "Why are you alone and no one is with you?" And David said to Ahimelech the priest, "The king has commissioned me with a matter and has said, 'Let no one know anything about the matter that I'm sending you, and with which I have commissioned you, and have directed the young men to a certain place. Now therefore, what do you have in your hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread, or whatever can be found.' And the priest answered David and said, 'There is no ordinary bread on hand. If only the young men have kept themselves from women.' And David answered the priest and said, 'Surely women have been kept from us as previously when I set out, and the vessels of the young men were holy, though it was an ordinary journey. How much more then today will their vessels be holy?'" Verse 6, "And the priest gave him consecrated bread. For there was no bread there but the bread of the presence, which was removed from before the Lord in order to put hot bread in its place when it was taken away. So David receives some food in order to sustain his men here. Now we see what happens with Saul. Chapter 22. Move on from chapter 21 to chapter 22. Verse 11 through 15, or 11 through 18, really. 11 through 18. It says, chapter 22, verse 11. Chapter 22, verse 11. "Then the king sent someone to summon Ahimelech the priest and all his father's household, and the priest who were in Nob, all of them came to the king." 85 of them now. It says, "Saul then answered the son of Ahitub, and he answered and said, 'Here am I, Lord.' And Saul said to him, 'Why have you and the son of Jesse conspired against me, in that you have given him bread and a sword, and have inquired of God for him, so that he would rise up against me by lying ambush as it is this day?'" See the things he's creating in his mind? All the hatred that he's creating in his mind toward David? In fact, we see as we go on to verse 17, it says, "The king said to the guards who were attending him, 'Turn now and put the priest of the Lord to death.' because their hand was with David, and because they knew that he was fleeing and did not reveal it to me. But the servants of the king were not willing to put forth their hands to attack the priest of the Lord. And then the king said to Doeg, you turn around and attack the priest. And Doeg the Edomite turned around and attacked the priest, and he killed that day 85 men who wore the linen ephod. We act many times with defensiveness to protect our motives that we have attributed to other people. A lot of times this isn't going to result in murder. You're not going to kill 85 people. But what will happen many times is you will assume the worst, and therefore there will be destructive attitudes that occur within your life. Paranoia destroys hope. The story of Jacob, paranoia destroys hope. Over in Genesis chapter 42 and then verse 36. Genesis 42 verse 36. In Genesis 42, the idea here is that Joseph, he's not told them yet who he is. He keeps Simeon behind. He puts Simeon in prison. He wants his other brothers to go back to his father and to bring back Benjamin, to bring back Benjamin to him. And in chapter 42 and in verse 36, chapter 42 and in verse 36, it says, and their father Jacob said to them, you have bereaved me. You have bereaved me of my children. Joseph is no more. Simeon is no more. And you would take Benjamin. All these things are against me. Experience paranoia. He didn't realize that soon all of his family were going to be reunited together. What happens? Past pain, fear. We think about those things and it causes us to imagine that there's nothing ahead for us. Nothing ahead for us. Nothing that's going to bring us joy. Nothing's going to bring us happiness. Nothing's going to bring us truth or peace. And Jacob didn't realize what was in the future for his family. Paranoia also can become self-fulfilling. In 1 Samuel chapter 18 with David and Jonathan, we see the relationship that David and Jonathan have as stated in chapter 18. And in verse 1, chapter 18 and in verse 1, it says, it came about when he finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David. A close relationship with David. Saul, on the other hand, did not. And knowing this, Saul hid the fact from Jonathan that he was trying to kill David. In chapter 20 and in verses 1 through 3, chapter 20, 1 Samuel, verses 1 through 3, it said, then David fled Naoth in Ramah, and came and said to Jonathan, what have I done? What is my iniquity? And what is my sin before your father that he is seeking my life? What's going on here, Jonathan? Why is your dad continually trying to kill me? And of course, Jonathan, he says, far from it. You shall not die. Behold, my father does nothing, either great or small, without disclosing it to me. So why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so. Over in chapter 11, or chapter 20, in verse 11 through 17. Jonathan said to David, "Come, let us go out to the field." And both of them went out to the field. And Jonathan said to David, "The Lord, the God of Israel, be witness. And when I have sounded out my father before this time tomorrow on the third day, behold, if there is good feeling toward David, shall I not then send you and make it known to you? And if it please my father to do you harm, may the Lord do so to Jonathan and more. Also, if I do not make it known to you and send you away, that you may go in safety. And may the Lord be with you as he has been with my father. If I am still alive, will you not show me loving kindness of the Lord, that I may not die? You shall not cut off your loving kindness from my house forever, not even when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth." So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, "May the Lord require it at the hands of David's enemies." And Jonathan made David vow again because of his love for him. He loved him as he loved his own life. But then in verse 30, Saul becomes angry with Jonathan. And in verse 30 it says, "And Saul's anger burned against Jonathan and said, 'You son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you are choosing the son of Jesse to your own shame, to the shame of your mother's nakedness?'" You see, paranoia can become self-fulfilling. Paranoia also, very quickly, can reflect an exalted view of our own importance. In Matthew chapter 2 and in verse 6, we see Herod the Great. Great because of what he has built. Verse 16. "And when Herod saw that he had been tricked by the Magi, he became very enraged and sent and slew all the male children who were in Bethlehem and all its vicinity from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had determined through the Magi." For 21 years, I took care of Glendale Rager. And for 21 years, I saw a man that experienced a good deal of paranoia, as you experience here, maybe with others, experience in other local churches as well. And he would talk about all the people that were upset with him. And I'd ask him the question, "Glendale, do you think these people that work 40, 50, 60 hours a week, they come home to your neighborhood, they live across the street from you, do you think that after doing that, taking care of their families, doing everything that they have to do, that the main focus of their life is on Glendale Rager?" It'd work for a couple of days. He'd be better. Then he'd go back to the very same thing again. And the same is true today. Do you really think that people are focusing their lives on you or me? to where they're thinking, oh, if I can just create so much hatred toward that person. Paranoia may reflect an exalted view of our own importance. Overcoming paranoia very quickly. One way is to silence speech with good behavior. We see in 1 Peter chapter 2 and in verse 11, to abstain from fleshly lust, living as sojourners and pilgrims. Chapter 2, 1 Peter and in verse 12, have a conduct honorable among the Gentiles, so when they speak against you as evildoers, you may, by your good works which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation. Christians can expect people to speak against us because that's what the Lord says. People are going to speak against us as children of God. Jesus told his disciples in Matthew chapter 24 and in verse 9, for they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. But the awareness of this, ladies and gentlemen, is not paranoia. It's just a recognition that the world is going to hate us if we do good. But what do we have to do? We have to have a conduct, he says in 1 Peter 2, that's going to be honorable, that's going to be characterized by good works. And then he says in Titus chapter 2 and in verse 8, Titus 2 and verse 8, Paul says that it causes an opponent to be ashamed because they're left with nothing evil to say to you. So you conduct yourself in such a way. Also, to overcome evil with good. Paranoia imagines that we can prevent mistreatment by acting defensively to guard against it. But Paul taught in Romans chapter 12 and in verse 21, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. You see, the bully or the gossip, the persecutor, the enemy, will fight as long as he or she has an opponent. And when you stop being the opponent, usually that stops. And hopefully it changes the heart of the enemy. And the last thing here today, unless it'll be yours, to forgive the wrongs of the past. One reason we have this wall of defensiveness is that someone is out to get me. Someone's out to get me. And we hang on. We hang on to resentment over past wrongs that we have experienced. Jesus says in Luke chapter 6, verse 37, forgive and you'll be forgiven. In Mark chapter 11, verse 26, and if you do not forgive, neither will your Father in heaven forgive your trespasses. Paranoia. A lot of people experience it. It's talked about quite a bit in the Bible. But we'd encourage you today that you have good news. And the good news is that you can be rescued from your sin. And you can tell other people about that too as well. That they can be rescued from their sin. and we can help each other. Or it might be those that need to come back to the Lord this morning. Whatever your need might be, come right now while together we stand, we sing.